And on that note, we're going to switch a little bit the format. We have as guests two poets from the Creative Spirits Beast Collective. Next to me is John Warren. And you're going to read us some poems which you wrote as a member of this collective. Maybe just introduce yourself very shortly. And
Hello, my name is John Welland. I am an artist and a writer and an activist here in Halifax. I have two poems I would like to share with you tonight. The first is called Electric Fire. There are those that believe the foolish myth of the coming dawn. They believe that at this time the darkness will end when a fiery orb rises in the sky to give the believers heat and light. They cannot accept the truth that the only light we can ever see is the electric fire that issues forth from wire and glass and is fashioned by our own artifice. It allows us to persist in our industries long into the darkness of eternal night, when the walls between worlds grow thin and our imagination can soar free. Electric fire burning bright in the urban jungle of the night. Electric fire of glass and wire. It gives us heat, it gives us light, it gives your life the gift of sight. This is plugged in, and it's about paranoia. Torture by wires was divinely inspired. Listen to the liars and see what transpires. Locked up in drug sin, my, what a sin. Symbolically bound and slapped around. Watch out, here comes the pin. But I'm plugged into you. From the beginning they knew what you're going to do, because they're plugged into you. They have guessing games to fulfill your time, to find your guilt, to dull your mind. Shot up, shot down, and left to roam around. Please don't start, because you're afraid of the dark, and the light's plugged into you. From the beginning they knew what you were going to do, because they're plugged into you. You want to know a mind that's not your own. You want to grow, but have nowhere to go. So you sat down without a sound, and the fear grew, fear of you-know-who, and he's plugged into you.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us today.
You're welcome.
We'll have more poets on in just a little bit. First of all, you're listening to Students for the Streets. It's an organization that works with the campus Dalhousie here in Halifax. And they work as a community liaison, organizing events with students as well as community action groups already established here in the Halifax area and on the ground. So this is their grassroots response to homelessness, and they've all done a diligent job of bringing in some really great people here. First up, we're going to have Lexis here, who is going to be just engaging in some conversation with Kyle, who you met previously. Now, Lexis, why don't you just take us off?
Hi, my name is Lexis Beattie, and I'm interviewing Kyle Vandermeer, who is a prime example of a homeless youth who made it and is now paying it forward. He doesn't see himself as a victim, but instead deconstructs his barriers and uses them as challenges. So, Kyle, if you want to start off by telling us about a bit of your experience being homeless.
All right, well, I'll break it down, okay? The first time I actually got into a facility that was a shelter, I was 3 years old, and my sister was two. And that was the first time we spent our Christmas in a shelter when I was three, and then we pretty much moved around from place to place because my mother was always trying to get out of abusive relationships and fleeing. So we go through shelter system. So I got, at a young age, a real big grasp of what was offered through these kind of resources. We moved around a lot like that. But when I was 14, that's when I really hit the streets dead on, because I left, and at that point, there's age limitations on certain shelters. You had to be 16 to get in. So, well, if you weren't in 16, you pretty much had to fend for yourself, which I always thought was kind of weird, but that's what you had to go through. So I spent the majority of my life going all over Ontario, because I'm originally from Etobicoke, well, South Etobicoke on the lakeshore. And through going through all those times, I used to use this thing called Project Go Home. It's a place where, it's a program place, like, they'll send you anywhere you have to with a bus ticket if you have a place to stay there. So I did that for most of a while. And so I came to a point in my life where it was either being homeless or being in jail. And I didn't like either one. So I thought, you know what, it's time for me to make a stand and make that change. And it and I tried my best, but it didn't happen. And so I had a real eye-opener one time when the only male figure I had in my life, my papa, my grandfather, I called him, and I was homeless at the time, and he told me not to worry about him, but I had enough problems of my own. So with that, that night he got rushed to emergency, and he fell into a coma. And then my family came to pick me up. I was staying in Sudbury, Ontario at the time at the Salvation Army. And we drove down there. It was about a five-hour commute. And by the time I got there, I missed him by 45 minutes. And I didn't live up to a promise that I made him that I was going to take that stand and change my life because I was still in the same position. So when I was in the morgue looking at him, I said to him that time that, you know what, I'm making a promise and I'm doing it this time. And then 3 days later, me and my friend boarded a bus and we came to Nova Scotia. I came up here to be homeless, cause not knowing anybody, not having a support system, not having anybody to turn to except for the person I came with. And we didn't know any of the resources because there's nothing in plain view. We were calling 411, trying to get names of shelters to go to in Nova Scotia. Through the process of elimination, we eventually got into the Phoenix shelter. And over that course, we ended up leaving it. And then my buddy left me because we were homeless on the street again. But I wasn't going to leave because I was working at Miller Waste out in Bears Lake. So I had a job. And that was the one thing that gave me hope every day. Because I knew when I got that check, I had that fresh start. I could try to do something. And at that time, I was sleeping in Salvation Army donation boxes. The ones that, like you see, the big white ones. That people don't. And I would do that, and I'd get up and go to work. But because I was late sometimes, I got replaced. So then I was homeless and unemployed in a city that I'd never been to and not know anybody from a hole in the ground. So I worked through that, and I got a job at Youth Live, a program on Mitchell Street, counting bottles and stuff like that. So I thought things were starting to look up for me. I got into a shelter again, and from there I got an apartment. So I was like, wow, I'm living high now. I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And then that all came crashing down. I lost that place, and then I was back on the street at square one. And I was down on my luck, and then eventually I got an application to this program. And it's a year program that helps youth that have been in conflict with the law to better themselves, to give them that step up, and it's called the Second Chance Program. I filled out that application. I went for an assessment week, didn't get paid. Then I got into the program. And over that course of the program, I really realized who I am and what I am very capable of. I always had the passion and the drive knowing that there is a better tomorrow, and I was going to achieve that. Because I knew I deserved it. Come hell or high water, I was there and I stuck it out. Now I started my own youth initiative with my business partner, and we throw our own events and stuff like that directed towards youth, creating a platform for self-expression. Because there's a lot going unnoticed. And a lot of the people that you guys call like unengaged youth, or the term is priority youth, that seem like they need it more. I could have been one of those priority youth, but like to me, people are my priority and youth is my focus. And I live with that. And that's why I set these modules for youth, because I am in a position where I can give a lot of advice and a lot of mentorship. And I've turned my life. I went from something to nothing, from nothing to something. And now I just rose from nothing, and I'm going to be something. Because I'm on fire all day. You should see me. So now I actually have the opportunity where I can hold my hand out and help people walk if they don't have the ability to do it themselves. And that's what I pride myself on. And I'm passionate about changing that, because there's the system that you guys have is the way. There's so many policies and regulations. It's what you have and it's what you have to work with. But it's made people like us want to stand up and pick up our ambitions and say, you know what, this helps, but we can do it bigger and better. And we can end this. And, like, this is what we're going for, a youth movement to rise up. Because, like, we see that this is so many organizations that don't communicate, that are there for homeless, but there's so many people doing so many different side projects that no one's coming together as a collective and actually making big differences. And that's why I'm here. I'm the glue. And I'm going to get that together. And that... And, like, that's what it is, man. I'm Kyle Vanderman. That ain't no joke when it comes to this kind of stuff. I'm telling you.
Well, thank you very much, Kyle, for really opening our eyes. You have a lot of zest for life, and that shows. Right now we are also going to talk with Anne here, who has been an advocate in Halifax for quite a long time now. And Brad Close here is going to be just starting her off, introducing her, and you're all welcome to join in some conversation from what arises.
So I'm interviewing Ann Duffy this evening, and Ann's been an advocate for 28 years in Halifax, and she's quite the powerhouse. And tonight we want to talk to Ann a little bit. In 82, she started working with Halifax Metro Welfare Right, and she's also worked for about 28 years with Community Advocates Network. And we're just wanting, Ann, for you to share a bit of your story and some of your experiences with those organizations in Halifax.
Okay, as Brad has said, I started with Halifax Metro Welfare Rights in 1982. You get your feet wet by learning a bit and volunteering to start with, and then you get to do. It's very important that that happen when you're an advocate. I spent 16 years with Welfare Rights, and I've been 28 years with Community Advocates Network, because after Welfare Rights closed in 1998, I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to do it anymore, but it happens. Everybody finds you. You get to do it. Advocacy is something that's infectious. It's something that you do from your heart. It's something you want to do. If you don't want, you know, if you're not feeling it, you don't do it. You really shouldn't be there. Like the Students for the Street, which I've met recently, I'm excited that they're, you know, learning how to. They're volunteering with different nonprofit organizations. They're out there trying to be, and that's one way of getting your feet wet. It's really, I'm excited about them, I really am. And advocacy, as I say, is infectious. For the most part, thankless. You don't get anybody that comes back and says thank you. Your reward is that they're a success. They're, you know, they've got what they need, you've done it for them, and they're out there being positive. You've changed their life from a negative situation to a positive one. And that's what people need. And, you know, you've been part of their negative life, so they don't come back and say thank you. That's not what you do it for. Your successes are your rewards. The job of an advocate is making the rights of clients, knowing what their rights are, and to make sure that they don't get stomped on by the system. Because the system isn't going to tell them what their rights are or what, you know, they're really available for them. They just give you a basic run through of what, you know, you might be available to you, but they don't give you special needs, they don't tell you about them, so you have to have somebody like an advocate to help you do that, to help you walk through the system. Advocates for homeless or marginally homeless have to make sure that their health is a positive thing in their life, because most homeless don't have, they have many health problems, which are not really looked at. So if they don't have an advocate or someone to help them get through that, they usually end up in very poor condition health-wise, and then how can they work? How can they do anything? You know, it's very important that their basic needs be met. You make sure that the client is being treated with dignity and respect. And you, if you give, they say, if you give a person a home, then they have a base to work from. Their life will be different. They can work, they can go to school from a stable position, but it's very important. And the Homeless Network, Community Action on Homelessness will tell you it's important for affordable housing to exist and for accessible housing to exist. Other than that, there is maybe no future for people that are on the street. They need affordable housing. Now we're going to get a bit political here. That the shelter, such as the cold, the Out of the Cold shelter, is not funded by any level of government. It's completely manned by volunteers. And the nonprofit, Metro Nonprofit Housing, is the administrative body. But it should actually be funded by the current Nova Scotia government. And the budget is coming. People need to do and watch very carefully the budget coming the end of March, which belongs to this government, and they can't say it doesn't. And also the federal government will be the end of March or early April. So we need to keep watch as to what they're doing and to keep them accountable for what they do. Thank you.
And would we be able to just close with just a brief word on what you have to say to young people and to young adults with respect to advocacy work?
Okay,
where do you start?
When young people do advocacy work, well, you start by joining and volunteering at nonprofit organizations, or at where your heart is. Maybe it's in school for educating, you know, people and regular students about the homeless. Or, and whenever you go anywhere, you do it in a buddy system. for the most part, you work either with someone that's there and you can trust, or you go as two people to do it. You don't go on your own. Your life might be at risk if you go on your own. So you really do advocacy work from your heart, and you do it as two people, like a buddy system.
All right, thank you very much. This was Ann, who's an advocate here in Halifax for a long time. Now, we're just going to rush back over to Kyle. Kyle, you've had an internal view, and yeah, let's just hear a little bit more about that.
So my internal view on the whole system? Or?
Yeah, if you had some advice for homeless youth based on your internal experience.
My biggest thing for advice I'd have to say is identifying where you want to go. As soon as you create that action plan and you know what steps you have to take, you won't be on the street. The trials and tribulations and the turmoil that you will face regularly, and like, you know, and that little bit of discrimination and stuff like that, that will pass. Because what you got to do is build yourself up so no one can say nothing about you. You let your credentials speak for you, you know, because like, that's the best thing to do. And no matter how hard life gets, you'll acquire one of the best tools that you'll use for the rest of your life, and that's perseverance. And once you have that and you can handle that, no obstacle can stand in your way.
Why don't you tell us a bit about your tilting the scale?
And another thing too is like, I touched on it briefly, is like, I believe, I learned this from one of my mentors, is about tilting the scale 1 degree every day. Things don't happen every night, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting here now, I'm not rich, I'm not like that. I could be a step away from being homeless again, but I'm choosing not, because every day I work at something new that tilts the scale, so I don't have to look back on that. And that could be just as simple as like, say you wanted to get a job. Well, the first step is saying, look, you're not going to get that. That might seem like a big task, you know what I mean? Because I know it's like not having clean clothes, not shaving for days, not showering, and trying to get out there. I know what that's like. But the thing is that the first you start with getting that resume, writing it, getting out there, hanging some out, you know what I mean? And there's another good thing with technology nowadays. You can apply for jobs via email. So it doesn't even matter if you stink or not. You can do that at your own public library. But, like, you know what I mean? I'll tell you straight up with it, right? Because I've been there. And I tilt the scale 1 degree every day. And now I'm starting to reap the benefits of it. And I thank myself and everybody that's involved with me, my mentors, because that's one of the biggest things, is you got to sit down and have someone that you can trust and be open with to help you guide you through some of the decisions that you're going to have to make in life. Because, you know what? If someone told you they made it on their own, I believe that's bull. All right, because there's always got to be someone there to help you along. Because, you know, nothing's created brand new anymore. Everything's transformed. Innovation is a key to success. So you change yourself, you change your ways, and you get yourself out there. It's all about marketing yourself. And once you get that, there's no denying. Because all you guys, some of the people that are homeless, I've been all over Canada homeless. And some of the best people I've ever met in my life, I've met on the street with 4 other people splitting a cigarette butt we found on the ground. So I know what that's like. And the knowledge and wisdom I gained for that, I'm ready to use that to utilize other people to stand up and make a movement with us. Because that's what we're here for. There shouldn't be homeless. And I just want to touch one point. I went to one of the town council meetings last week, and the biggest issue that they were having in Halifax was how much trunk space they're going to need in cabs and citizens on patrol getting funding. I guess we need something like that. But what are our councils doing if they're out measuring trunk space? Where are the real issues? You know what I mean? Let's start spearheading them and making things happen. And my name is Kyle Vanderme, and you know what I mean? You see me around, you'll hear my name. But I'm here for you guys. I'm the voice.
I went to that, and I'd like to say, Kyle graduated from the Second Chance program on Monday and actually received 2 awards.
Yeah, I got a couple of awards and everything. It's all possible, right? Nothing's impossible unless you don't try at
that's
it, right?
Well, thank you very much, Kyle, for coming on, and Lexis, too, for bringing you guys all here. We're going to have a little bit of spoken word, some poetry read by people from the streets. I have a piece that I'm just going to read for the person that made this. It's not my work. It's from a fellow mate from Halifax, so just listen up. I is whatever, whichever you is. The fate of birth dealt each one their own hand. Some had nursemaid silver spoons, while others were fed only lovingly ghetto morsels. It was questionable who broke the gate with the better post position. Father Sigmund and Uncle Young would argue over the formative processes, while cognitive seasoning family values genetics and environment would each demand their own 2 cents worth as well. Somewhere, free will came out swinging, bottom line, that each had to play out their own hand. The lessons unfolded to be grasped and utilized to further spiral evolutions of the human spirit. The progression was distinct and individual. It started with a cut and tied an umbilical cord and did not simply conclude as earth and flowers covered the casket. Someone said that God was keeping score, to which someone else countered that was only religious speculation. A third jumped in with reciprocal laws of karma, evidence of the soul, even, and it soon began to look like everyone had their own opinions and beliefs. Even Allah screamed for his share of accumulative sacrifice. A 10-year-old child asked an old blind man, "What if some of the cards in my hand have two faces on them?" Laughter rippled deep from the old man's belly. "Ain't no different than most hands, child. It's the duality and paradox of life, where what doesn't seem to mesh actually does go together. Tell you what, though, you go to your heart, and you cannot go too far wrong." Then a pause as their eyes locked. The man could feel the child's focus, then said slowly, "A gap between the first four words, love, light, God, and the truth, are all pretty closely related." The child smiles, shines even, reassured to the heart. The explanation was perfect for the child.
Amen.
So that was written by one of our fellow mates on the Halifax streets, and I'm Desiree McNeil reading that for him, but yeah, that's not mine. And we have two other poets in the room, and we'd love to hear your work, as I can tell that you're with Creative Spirits East with Beef House. So if you could just shout out to Canada who you are, and then read your poem.
Hello, Canada. My name is Eddie Fong. I live with mental illness. I live with schizophrenia. I've been receiving treatment for well over a decade. Many years ago in Toronto, I had become homeless. And one of the biggest things I noticed, thinking back, is that I didn't have any keys. So I wrote a poem, a short poem, "The Absolute Homeless." The homeless have no keys, no locks to unlock, no doors to enter, no chairs to own, no rooms to retreat, no bathrooms to hurry, no mirror to look into. And when I'm not feeling well, how I feel. Morning. I wake before the birds, listening for the voices as I gently peer into reality, wiping the sleep away to accept another day of consciousness. Uncertain of what lies ahead, like opening a mysterious box at the doorstep. And the last poem I'd like to share is how I feel about my illness, and it's titled "Gene." Gene. The tortoise moves along slowly, bearing its heavy inheritance from long ago. Thank you.
That's deep.
Yeah. We have one more person just before we close up this hour to read her poetry with us and share some great creative inspiration. And if you could just introduce yourself to the rest of Canada and share with us your art.
Hello, Canada. My name is Brenda. I wrote this two poems about 2 hours ago. I'm lucky. No leaving crumbs on sidewalks. Eight responsible rollers. Pick-me-up butts. Blistering rains. Sleets. Ice storms devour hopes. Tired bones share makings. Never step on strays named Humphrey. Never Bogart the Sphinx. All right. The next one is Show and Tell Canada. You can't see a little drawing, but it is a person, could be a man, woman, youth, wearing a sheet around the body. All right. Quite there, you can't see it, but I'll read what I wrote.
So it's a picture with a
person with a sheet
wrapped around, and it looks quite cold, and there's a dark, cool background.
Yes, I think. Could color between the lines, stuck behind the gridlock. He was never on the list. White sheets, intertwined, sealed ribcages. The leader paid your room and board. Be grateful. Oh, bastardly one. Yes, 50 years later, the same tale is retold. The leader scrubbing floors. On hands and knees to house the shameful one who couldn't count the alphabet in the trees, who couldn't run between the opaque flowers. God forbid, you are so privileged, never ended up on golden roads, never sleep between latched gates, hands repressed around the bowl, not going to gobble the bite, the white sheets that intertwine suppressed running shoes. Thank you, Canada. I'm very privileged to be reading this. Thank you.
Well, thank you to all our guests. This was.
You are listening to the Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting on nearly 40 stations across Canada.